President Trump came into office with the intention of eliminating the Affordable Care Act, and many Republican members of Congress were at least focused on repealing and replacing the ACA. But some of it remains intact, leaving states to try to deal with the changes. Other health issues that find a level of disconnect between federal and local officials include medical marijuana and opioids. Those are just a couple of the topics to be addressed beginning today in Washington, D.C. for the conference Public Health Law on the Front Lines, Countering Law and Policy Challenges to State and Local Innovations. And with me to discuss them is James Hodge, Professor of Public Health Law and Ethics at ASU's O'Connor College of Law. James, how much does the word uncertainty come into play here as state and local officials try to figure out how to be innovative in public health while federal officials may be putting up certain obstacles?
Oh, let me tell you just about in one particular setting, marijuana law and policy. So what you're seeing across a lot of states, many including our western states, Arizona front and center, is a little more favorable pro-marijuana policy that's been implemented and with public approval at work in states like Arizona for medical marijuana, and states like California for recreational and medical, multiple other states going down that path. Steve, what you've seen against that backdrop is a federal response from the Department of Justice suggesting that there will be a new understanding and appreciation for how significant the feds will go to prosecute marijuana-related offenses. The product remains a Schedule I drug under the Controlled Substances Act, which basically means there is no acceptable federal use for it. You're seeing a federal Department of Justice suggesting that it will potentially come after states that are attempting to implement what the population's already well approved years ago, California being front and center with one of the earliest medical marijuana laws and now recreational laws. Steve, what this means from a uncertainty perspective, it's very tough to implement policy designed to help and promote public health when you don't know what that federal, state, local balance will look like going forward. In marijuana law and policy, it is unpredictable at best.
Yeah, James, another major issue at the conference, which is overarching in many ways, is reform of the Affordable Care Act. We have seen Congress try to chip away at it a little bit. President Trump has had comments about it as well, based on what states are going to try to do and what they can do. And again, I hate to bring up the specter of that word uncertainty again, but if the House and the Senate decide to take another crack at it and it does chip away more, how much does that put states in a tough position in terms of deciding what they're going to do and how quickly they can do it?
With the election of President Trump and majorities within the House and the Senate, everyone recognized there would be diminutions in relation to the Affordable Care Act. And obviously the pitch to the American public at the point in time of the election was we're going to get rid of the Affordable Care Act entirely. Well, that didn't quite happen. We know the politics behind that last summer. Steve, though, what is being put in place that's really interesting that states are struggling to deal with is a sort of chipping away strategy at what the initiatives of the Affordable Care Act are. As you look at that chipping away strategy start to take hold, you're seeing states struggle to try to figure out how they're going to actually make up for key differences. A very clear example of that relates to what's already on the way out, the individual mandate. So this, through the Tax Act that we saw passed through the administration this past end of the year of 2017, you will see the end of the individual mandate at the end of 2018. That basically means individuals do not any longer have to get health insurance to meet Affordable Care Act requirements. Now, many Americans applaud that. They say, great, this is fantastic. We never liked it to begin with. The dilemma is millions of Americans that might have wanted it are going to find themselves against the backdrop of not being able to get it. There won't be some of the subsidies that were in place to make that happen. There are even efforts to actually start culling back essential health benefits of these plans so they won't cover what they used to. And there's already floating within Capitol Hill, literally steps away from my location here in D.C. right now, proposals to actually literally take away some of the pre-existing condition limitations that were there through the Affordable Care Act itself. Net end of that, should that go into place, would be a return to insurance policies that can reject you as an individual for your pre-existing conditions, something no American found popular prior to the Affordable Care Act, could be on the upswing again.
And what are you seeing as far as what states are going to run into as it relates to providing health care up against religious freedom and whether people who work in the medical field can claim certain religious objections based on what a patient or a consumer may request?
Yes, I know. We saw a very recent Supreme Court case, the Colorado baker who wanted to deny services to an individual, to a couple that was seeking a specific cake for a wedding that would involve two men involved in the particular scenario. The observation to that case and what is actually percolating in relation to healthcare services in the United States is profound. Wedding cakes is one thing, Steve. But when you start denying healthcare services to individuals in the United States based on religious or conscientious objections, that is highly problematic. It's exactly what's front and center with a new committee that has been formed within the Department of Health and Human Services at the national level. They've issued a preliminary rule that is about respecting healthcare workers' rights to some level of religious or conscientious objections to specific services being provided. Now, that's one thing. And actually, many Americans would say, well, that's a good thing. I mean, we don't want doctors or nurses feeling like they have to provide a healthcare service that's completely an opposite to their religious views. There's actually existing federal law in place to suggest that's that's possible. Steve, here's the dilemma. You take that to a different level. You take that observation to a level where you start seeing healthcare workers deny entire classes of services or deny services to specific types of persons just based on their own religious objections to treating them. This is the type of decision-making that does get very dicey and very controversial at the state and local levels. And that final rule is expected out any time from HHS in relation to exactly what healthcare workers should use as a basis for denying health services. It's going to be a big problem.
That is James Hodge, professor of public health law and ethics at ASU's O'Connor College of Law. He's been speaking to me from Washington, D.C., where he's attending the two-day conference, Public Health Law on the Front Lines, Countering Law and Policy Challenges to State and Local Innovations. James Hodge, thanks as always.
As always as well, Steve. A pleasure.